We are here at the Boehringer Ingelheim North Carolina Swine Health Seminar. With me is Chris Hurt from Purdue University, and he gave a talk today on from an economics perspective, what we're looking at. Lots of different issues, but a big part of it is the biofuels industry, and that it have resulted in higher feed prices. And also we're looking at other factors like world economic growth and the value of the dollar. But I'll let you talk about that, Chris. First of all, let's just talk about what you call the psychology of surplus and how that has impacted our policy decisions, which have in turn impacted our feed prices.
Well, as we look at agricultural history, we see that the biggest single problem in U.S. agriculture over the last 70, 80 years has been our ability to be so productive. We could produce so much corn, soybeans, wheat. What a blessing with a resource base we had. But when you had such surpluses, you had low prices, low farm incomes. So most of our policy is actually based upon trying to do things to either support or bolster or to get higher those farm prices. These are such things as if we want prices to rise, we would try to do things that would reduce the supply, like reduce that supply of corn, set-aside programs, programs that have like conservation reserve program, or we would try to increase demand. So programs like the school lunch program, food in the schools for surplus commodities, even food stamps, food for peace, where we gave food to the world and continue to do that. Those were really ag programs. We got to get rid of this surplus. We continue to see a policy and a psychology of surplus in our policy from Washington, when it turns out we are anything but a surplus today. We're in a period of shortage of basic food ingredients.
Now, and you got applause when you said, when government gets involved in markets, things really get screwed up. Is that what we're looking at today?
Well, obviously governments get involved with markets because there is some kind of a felt need, or there is a sector that has been harmed. We've clearly seen this in the 1980s as an example with falling land values around the country in terms of agricultural land. And that was just a period when we lost our demand base that we had in the 1970s. And suddenly land was falling sharply. There was almost nothing that was going to turn that around in terms of supply and demand fundamentals. It was largely the U.S. federal government came in with programs to support ag incomes so that there could be a base to stop the land prices from falling. Now, again, that was a decision made in policy. But it also distorts markets. Markets change very quickly. They can be very dramatic, and they can be very harmful to participants in those markets. And this is where those participants often go to the government and say, solve my problems for me. When that constituency gets big enough and there's enough legislators from farm states that say, we've got to have this for our farmers, and negotiate with urban legislators, away we go with agricultural policy. So I think we do have currently in our when we are exporting ethanol to the magnitude that we are, this really does seem like a distortion of markets. We passed our renewable fuels programs to reduce dependence on foreign oil. We didn't pass those to stimulate the industry so much that we were producing so much that we could sell it to other countries. Again, maybe this is a short-term phenomenon, but I think it's an example of where this is illogical direction that we're seeing, partially because of government policy.
Well, specifically related to feed prices, we saw, as you said, two major demand shocks. Corn in the last 5 years or so, corn going to ethanol is one dramatic one, but the other one was soybean exports to China. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and what I think we all recognize in agriculture, that big demand growth, corn going into ethanol. But what is often missed is the other big thing going on, and going on at the same time, was the massive increase of soybean purchases from the U.S. to China. And what we did was to try to put that on a acres of land basis. And when you put it on acres of land, back in 2005 crops, we were using about 16 million acres for those two demands, corn to ethanol, soybeans going to China. By the time we got to the 2010 crop, that was 46, from 16 to 46, almost a tripling of the acreage. So this was a massive amount of new land, if you'll think about it that way, that was required, or a demand increase. Sometimes in markets we call that a demand shock. So much increase in demand in such a short period of time that our supply base just couldn't keep up with that. Initially, we had some surplus back in 2005 of corn, soybeans, and wheat, but very quickly that got used up. And then we were into shortages starting in 2008 and are repeating those extreme shortage periods, particularly for corn and soybeans. Now, with the 11 crop that we're growing in jeopardy in both corn and soybeans, we have to say we have another year where there's just not going to be enough corn and soybeans in the world. For the livestock sector, that means extremely high prices, corn and soybean meal, over this next year.
Now, regarding that, how has the livestock, the different livestock sectors reacted over the last several, 5 years or so, in terms of downsizing to respond to these higher feed prices?
Well, of course, the initial thing we saw in the 2008 run-up of commodity feed prices was that the livestock sector can't just pass on those costs. Corn goes from $2 in the Midwest and goes up to $6 or higher. That just raises the cost for the livestock sector. They can't pass that on to the packer and on to the consumer. So we went through a period of very large losses, high cost relative to the revenues that our livestock producers could get in 2008 and 2009. Those large losses caused some producers to be discouraged, reduced production, some went out of the industry, and we even had bankruptcies. What that process is economically of discouragement, of getting a smaller and smaller supply across the country. When you get a small enough supply, then you start to push up those prices both at the farm level and at the retail level. So we're now seeing the consequences of that for those of us at the consumer level, at the grocery store and the restaurants. Record high pork and beef prices in 2011. What I would say is those are a result of the 2008 higher feed cost that's actually now taken us 3 years to get the herds reduced, and now essentially through a process of liquidation of some of that livestock, get the prices of consumers up to these higher levels. Now, these are the high levels that are required to pay $6 and $7 for corn. So until corn prices could go lower, we're not going to see any ability for our retail prices on our meat and poultry products to come lower. In fact, we think we'll be 8 to 10% higher, particularly on the red meats this year at the consumption level, consumer retail level. Right now, it looks like with this short 2011 crop, we're going to be right up there at least 6 to 8% next year. So we really are seeing as consumers now, finally, the impacts of what was the 08 high prices, and it looks like those are going to continue on in for the next several years.
Well, as a result of those higher prices, we're seeing stagnating, if not lowering, consumer demand here in the United States, specifically for pork. But you talked about how the salvation for the pork industry is really our export market. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, yes, we are seeing, because of the higher retail prices that we see on pork and beef, as well as poultry products, we are seeing, as we would expect, higher prices. Some consumers are reducing their consumption of those products. Now, this isn't a reflection of the quality. It's not a reflection that the industries have done a bad job of promoting their products. It's just that when the prices go up, we're going to see some cutback in the usage. That's what we're going through right now. And we've dropped, in terms of poultry and red meat consumption, about 20 pounds per capita here in the last 4 years since 2007. That's a result of higher feed prices, cutting back on the livestock and poultry herds, and now finally higher consumer prices. What this all says is that that we're going to struggle here in the United States, I think, for meat demand. We're going to have these high prices at the consumer level. Consumers' incomes are not growing as fast as the prices of some of our costs, like food and fuel, are going up. And basically that means Americans are going backwards in lifestyle. We can't have as many things or maybe the same quality of things. Americans don't like that, but this is the world we're in 2011, probably 2012. Cost of living is just going up faster than what our wages and salaries are going up. So we turn that over and look at the international market. And what we see there is a different world. We see the developed world, Europe, the United States, Japan, all struggling. These are the big economies of the world and are all struggling to get their economies kickstarted, to get some growth in their economies. Meanwhile, we look at the developing world, China, Brazil, India, the former Soviet Union, and those developing economies are doing very well. China is a great focal point where we see nearly 10% income growth. And as those incomes are growing pretty consistently year after year, more income want more food. Not only do they want more food, but we're seeing the transition, dietary transition, from primarily a rice-based diet to more meat in that diet, more animal protein. That requires more corn. That requires more soybean meal. And this is a big demand factor going on for food out in the world as well. That's true of pork. And so right now, the July numbers for China, 57% increase in consumer prices of pork in July this year versus last year. They are in strong need of increasing the supply of pork. And the way to do that quickly is not to increase production. That'll take a year or more to get more pork into the marketplace. The way to do that is to buy that from the United States and Canada. So I think we're pretty optimistic that we're going to see not only China be fairly aggressive buyers later this year, but also looks like South Korea will be as well. And so that's a big hope, given that cost on the feed side look very high this year for the pork producers. Can we also get a demand enhancement as well from foreign purchases from China and South Korea?
And also, you said Mexico is really leading the pack as far as increasing exports to that country.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And again, Mexico, we have a natural trade advantage because of our location with Mexico. But again, we see the Mexican economy doing relatively better in terms of percentage growth of their incomes. And they are making that dietary transition as well. So we look at there at pork consumption probably increasing 3 to 4% a year annually. Where here in the United States, it's almost zero. It's just pretty flat. So I think, again, looking to those markets where we have the tremendous pork production industry in terms of the efficiency, the low cost, we have a packing industry, a transportation, packaging, and processing industry that is the envy of the world, and that's what we need to be promoting, that we can supply more of your pork product, not only in Mexico, but South Korea as well as China.
All right. Thank you very much. Here at the Boehringer Ingelheim Swine Health Seminar in North Carolina, I'm Cindy Zimmerman.